The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Shopify, the platform I'm currently in the process of migrating to. Why the move away from Magento, which I've used for years? Well, Shopify has an enormous ecosystem of developers and apps, and their template framework is really well architected. Plus, of course, they're a hosted service, so I can focus on my business instead of spending hours playing system admin and troubleshooting server problems. So if you're looking for a highly customizable solution you don't need a programmer to manage, check them out at shopify.com. Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, your headquarters for building a six-figure plus e-commerce business. I'm your host, e-commerce entrepreneur, and Jeff Bezos wannabe, Andrew Derry. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. Today we're going to be doing something I haven't done in a couple months. Going to be doing e-commerce news roundup, talking about what's been going on in the e-commerce and internet world the last couple months, and also chat about some of the interesting and kind of compelling forum discussions we've had in the private forum over the last handful of months. And joining me to weigh in and talk about all the news is Mr. Drew Sanaki. Welcome, Drew.
Hello, Andrew. It's good to be here.
Thanks for coming on once again. Keep waiting for the day when you say, I'm sorry, Andrew, you've tarnished my reputation enough. I can no longer come onto your podcast. But so far, we haven't gotten there, which is great. Before diving into the discussion, want to do, of course, first a for sale shout out. And this one's going out to Jet Nugent from stickhunters.com. And Jet writes in and says, I just made my first sale on stickhunters.com reselling takedown recursive bows, or recurve bows, rather. What's so exciting about this sale is that I launched the site as a placeholder while generating content less than a month ago. I got my first shipment of product from my supplier Monday, turned my paid channels on Wednesday, and had my first sale on Friday. My budgets are very minimal, about $5 a day on Google, a dollar a day on Facebook. And while I'm waiting for my high margin accessories to arrive, really just thrilled about this first sale. So Jet, awesome. Congratulations. It's always nice when you get sales before you're you expect to be live. And we'll link up over to a site. I really liked your video of you and some buddies, like just using the product, shooting arrows in the woods. It's got a cool soundtrack. It looks really authentic. It's a cool video. So we'll link up over to that there. So that being said, let's go ahead and get into today's discussion about what's been going on in the e-commerce world. So Drew, first thing we got to talk about here, December 2014, Cyber Monday and Black Friday. Were you out beating down the doors early Friday morning to save money?
I wasn't. Well, actually, I was probably one of these mobile shoppers that we're going to talk about. Because I was at the in-laws, or as we called them in the Navy, the outlaws. I was hanging out with the outlaws for 5 days. And, I had my trusty iPhone. That was it. They didn't have any Wi-Fi at their house. And I did some Christmas shopping on my mobile.
Really? So you actually were buying stuff on your phone, like typing in the...
I bought a couple of things for me. So because you're bored stiff when you're at your outlaws. And so I would just sequester myself in the bedroom and read through all the deals that were popping into my inbox. And I bought a couple of things.
So how was, let's do a little anecdotal case study here. Obviously mobiles, everyone's saying, hey, mobile's taking off, and it is. But how was the purchasing experience for you on that phone? Like, how were the sites? Was it a pain with the credit card information? How would you grade the overall experience?
It could be improved. Actually, I think I got to put a caveat there. I was on my tablet, so it was slightly easier than on my mobile phone. But, I hit a lot of the sites that I've already purchased from. So my credit card information was already in there. And it was good. I enjoyed it. But I was very directed. I wasn't browsing. So I think that had to do with it too. I kind of knew what I wanted.
Yeah. You were at hipsterVneck.com where they have your credit card on file, of course, from your weekly purchases there.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like overall it was really good. I heard, saw different stats from different outlets, but anywhere from 8.5% to 16% up year over year. And it looked like we had a poll in the private forum that reflected that. It sounds like 70% of all of our forum members saw an increase in Cyber Monday sales, which was great. Mobile, this is an interesting stat. I thought mobile represented 29% of the traffic, but only 9% of sales. And tablet represented about 12.5% of traffic and about 12.9% of sales. So it was much more even there. So a lot of people shopping on mobile, but still, not even 10% of overall sales on mobile, which is crazy. So
yeah, is that about average anyway? I mean, or is it sort of, was that in line with what it is for the rest of the year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know about that. I'm thinking about my site right now for mobile sales. Yeah, we're probably at about 10% of revenue from mobile, roughly, very ballpark without checking. But again, we have a terrible mobile site right now, which we're working on. So
Right. Yeah,
so interesting. Moving on, Capital One acquired AmeriCommerce. What do you think about this?
That was kind of, it was interesting because you don't hear about these kind of things. Like eBay buying Magento was probably the last big acquisition that I could remember. And AmeriCommerce, have you ever used AmeriCommerce?
No.
Played around with it?
I've heard a lot of good things recently though about it though.
Yeah, it's good. I think that the one drawback is you don't hear a lot of e-commerce shop owners using it. So I don't run into it that much. It seems pretty niche for some reason or another. And it was just kind of interesting that Capital One decided to buy an e-commerce platform. And I immediately was wondering why they did. And I think they're sort of buying more and more small business services, right? Like they've got a couple services that are targeting small business owners. And so they're probably just building out a family of products.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's kind of two sides to any time you've got a company like AmeriCommerce, which has a very, very kind of a scrappy in the best possible way culture. You know, they're very focused on small merchants and kind of a tech fun culture. Anytime you have a big, enormous financial company like Capital One come in, there's a perspective, which of course is the reason they say that they did the deal, is they've got more resources to be able to expand and create a better product, et cetera. But then on the flip side, I know that there's been some AmeriCommerce merchants or potential merchants who also are worried that, you know, that having a huge brand come in will potentially dilute or take away from what made the product so great. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. You know, hopefully it ends up working out really well for them because, more competition in the cart space is never a bad thing for small merchants.
That's how I felt about it. You've got Shopify and BigCommerce and Magento, and then you kind of have everybody else. So it's nice to have another significant competitor.
Yeah, I agree. They're the big three, you know, for sure in the space. So good luck. Hopefully, if you're on AmeriCommerce, and if you are AmeriCommerce, hope it works out really well. Google Enhanced Analytics has been around in beta for a while, but Google moved it out of beta just, I think, last month in November and officially released new analytics for e-commerce, which is really cool. So now we have even more data that we won't take actionable insights on because we're overwhelmed by data.
True.
This
one is overwhelming. There's a lot you can do with this.
Oh, there's so much. What feature did you see, Drew, that stood out the most to you that you thought was the coolest?
Well, you know, I've been trying to use a lot of these reports in the past, but I do it in such a back-assword way, you know, where like funnel optimization. For years, you couldn't get the funnel report that you now can get through enhanced e-commerce analytics in Google Analytics, and you'd have to use something like PaddyTrack, which is a third-party app that allows you to have some better visualization of your funnels. So that's a big thing, is like visualizing your checkout funnels and determining where people are dropping out of your checkout, and that will then tell you where you should spend some of your A/B testing time or usability time to improve that step. I also like the way you can do some user segmentation with analytics. In the past, you weren't able to get user level segmentation. You'd have to create sort of a custom tag or event for some of your users, but now it's much easier to segment out certain parts of your users and also get that to talk to your retargeting campaigns. So I like that.
Yeah, just to interject there, one thing that I thought was really cool is you can segment by intent. So you can go in, and right now, like if I was going to set up a retargeting campaign, you just do it dumbly, right? Did they visit the site? We'll retarget them. But right. With this, you can go in and say, hey, well, who are the most valuable customers? It's not the guy who landed on your site for 5 seconds and bounced. It's the guy who spent time and checked out, started the checkout process, but disappeared. He's going to be a way better investment in terms of retargeting dollars than the other guy. And so you can target those people, retarget to them as opposed to everybody.
Yeah. It used to be such a pain to set up those retargeting pools because you'd have to do custom development to get them into your cart. But it's much easier now. And I think the holy grail, is that you have all this customer data in one place, and then you can run not only remarketing, retargeting campaigns, but also on-site offers, pop-up offers, and email marketing. Like, those are the big three ways of reaching out and touching customers, but they all should be pulling from the same customer data. And it's just been very hard to do until now.
Yeah, really cool. Another feature too that I thought were impressive is you can track product impressions and get a conversion rate per product. And I think you can, I think you can probably track this over time. So you can look at your top products, and if you see the conversion rate for one of your top products dive, well, hey, what's going on there? You can look into maybe all your competitors axed the price on it, or maybe something else happened. And you can also start to prioritize maybe showcasing and display more prominently your products that have outstanding conversion rates that you have buried in corners of your site. You know, you mentioned the funnels. I think the funnel you were talking about, Drew, are you talking about a funnel where instead of, because there's kind of the checkout funnel, like, hey, you get the cart page, billing, payment, finalization, and success. But the funnel that I think that enhanced analytics allows you to create is how many people came to the site, how many people added a product, how many people viewed a category page, viewed a product page, added it to their cart, and really, maybe not URLs, but categories, and it walks you through that. And I believe, like, when we were doing that on Magento, we had to fire custom Google Analytic tags for each time that happened. But this is built in by default to create that funnel. So you can log in, and assuming it's set up, you just see that funnel automatically.
Right.
Which is super nice.
That is super nice.
Yeah. So I don't know about you, but there's been a lot of times when I've logged in and to my analytics and realized for the past X number of months my checkout funnel has not been working right. And I just, you know, you do a facepalm. Have you done that a lot?
Yes.
Yes. The worst. So yeah, just a few. Oh, go ahead.
On the product level stuff, I think a lot of it was possible before, but you had to sort of do it in a hack way where you'd, you know, I would use certain naming conventions for my products to get them to show up in the content reports and then kind of guess at conversion rates there. So just, I think it makes it all a lot easier. It's not straight out of the box. Like, you've got to do some configuration to set it up properly. But I think once you get over that hump, it's pretty promising.
Yeah, it looks really promising. If you're on Shopify or PrestaShop and a few others, I think we're release partners with Google. And so it should work pretty seamlessly right immediately if you're on one of those platforms. And then just a note, you need to be on Universal Analytics. I don't believe this works with the legacy analytics.
Right.
The biggest recorded day ever of online sales. Drew, did you know what Singles Day is? Had you heard of that before?
I started Singles Day when I was single, living in China.
9 billion. Yep. You started it. Let's hear the story. I'd love to hear this.
I didn't. No, I'm just joking. Yeah, I heard it. It's like this not made up holiday, but what? It started 2 or 3 years ago?
I think it is a made up holiday. I think Alibaba created Singles Day
to just celebrate being single.
I think so. I think this is like the most brilliant, you know how they, you know, as much as we love mothers and fathers and everybody, how those were holidays that were construct of the, you know, the commercial world. I think this is about as brilliant as you get. So
it's a couple years old, and it's now the biggest shopping day of the year globally.
Globally, right? Yeah. Yeah, and the way I understand it is it's on 11/11, so all the ones for being single, and it's the day when people, supposedly single people, buy gifts for themselves. It's like the anti-Valentine's Day. Is that how you understand it?
That's how I understand.
And anyway, $9 billion in sales on November 11th. This was bigger than Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined. That's crazy. That's just nuts.
Cyber Monday itself has only been around since 2005, I think. Just that, you know, which is kind of interesting that even Black Friday, I'm not sure when the term Black Friday was coined, but I would guess it's in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think you're right. I think it's been pretty recent. There's an interesting, I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit here, but there's a really interesting forum discussion this last week how somebody was saying it's so odd as a store owner. I think it was Lars Hundley, call out to Lars. It's so odd as a store owner to be really excited about Black Friday and Cyber Monday because you know you're almost certainly going to make more money, but also at the same time be slightly disgusted with how consumeristic that holiday weekend has become. And especially, I think Lars, myself as well, are a little more minimalistic and not really huge fans of consuming just gobs of stuff. So like this, you know, the two forces fighting against each other, which I thought was interesting.
I think it's a little bit of a turnoff. Well, probably a big turnoff, just how consumer focused that weekend is. But I also enjoy reading the stories of people like mobbing Walmarts and getting crushed.
You enjoy reading those?
Well, it's just kind of funny. You know, like people really go to Walmart to, you know, get the deals. But like, can't you get the same deals? This is spoken like a true New Yorker, but can't you get the same deals online?
Or
do you have to go to Walmart to get the deals?
I think some of them. Have you ever done it? Like, I have never.
There are no Walmarts in New York. So this, I'm only. You know, I've always wondered that. Like, why is this such a big idea? You know, don't these people have internet? Can't you just like log on and get the same deal from the site?
I don't think you can. I think for like, you know, the big screen TVs, right? That's the classic image, like two people fighting over a big screen. I think those, they'll have like 10 of those in the whole store, you know, and there's a thousand people outside. And so that's why you get sense. Yeah, I think that's what causes the problem. So finally, before we harsh too much on the industry that keeps us alive, mobile friendly SERPs results. This is something I've seen. It's just kind of an interesting note, not groundbreaking or anything, but over the past month or two, I've seen Google start, if you're on a mobile phone and you search for something in Google, next to the listings, it's got a little designation. It started off as a little mobile phone icon, and now it says actually mobile friendly. And it comes and goes. Some days I'll see it, some days I won't. But bottom line is Google is testing, showing right in the search results what sites are mobile optimized and what aren't, which I thought was fascinating.
Huh.
Yeah. Have you seen that at all?
I've never seen it. Although I know on the paid acquisition side of things, it's one of the first things we do when we work with a client on the paid side. And if it's a client, say like a yoga studio that needs, you know, where there's a strong call to action to just call the studio, like just having those, putting their 800 number or something in their ad it's like the first thing you do on mobile. You get a tremendous conversion rate. It's usually, as long as you have call tracking, it's a great way to sort of run their ad strategy on mobile. So I'm not surprised that Google is taking it to the next logical step and trying to do it on the organic results.
Yeah, interesting. So even, you know, raising the stakes even more if you're still in the Stone Ages. Yeah. So want to highlight a few of the really interesting forum threads and discussions we had this week. And the first one, Drew, I'd really be interested to get your perspective on. It was a discussion about, is it worth it being in the Inc. 500 or the IRCE 500? The Inc. 500, I believe, is the fastest 500 growing companies in America. And then the IRCE is the Internet Retailer Top 500, list of top 500 retailers online. And there's people on both sides of this issue, people that deserved to be in there and that were either had been in that, been in the Inc. 500 or the IRC 500 or that had opted out of that, you know. So Drew, I mean, the upside, of course, is you get more recognition. You can maybe get a little more status for your company, among other things. The downside is you pretty much are just putting up a huge flag saying, hey, we're successful. Come compete with us. So, you know, with your retailer, was that something when you were growing it that you ever thought about or weighed the risks of at all?
Yeah, I always wanted to apply and thought it would be kind of cool, but I get it. On the other hand, I was flipping through that issue every year looking for categories that we could go into. You know, in one year, it was the baby category. There were a number of baby retailers that were, you know, or maybe there was one year, and then the next year, there were like five in the Inc. 500 of baby product retailers. So I get it. I think in retrospect, if you want, you know, we sold our company. If you want to sell your company, it might be a good thing to be in the Inc. 500 or the IRC listing like a couple of years leading up to a sale just to get on people's radar. But yeah, I think otherwise it probably does invite a little bit of competition.
One of the funny things I didn't expect that somebody warned about was, among many other things, was if you're on that list, you get bombarded by people trying to sell you stuff.
Yeah, I'll bet.
You know, it's just nonstop. And one person was just said it was almost overwhelming how many solicitors they had.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I would guess, you know, if you've got a little dropship retailer and you're making money because you found a niche that nobody else has thought to go into, I would probably stay off the public listings. But You know, if you've got a proprietary product and maybe you manufacture it yourself, and there's really, you know, no chance that a competitor could reverse engineer what you do, then have at it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Next kind of interesting forum discussion was one about an employee who came in and really more or less used up more than her allocated amount of vacation and sick time and didn't go to the boss to really proactively talk about it ahead of time. She just kind of used the extra time. And, you know, so the question was, how lenient are you in that situation? How do you walk that line? Like, and do you dock that employee's pay? And it was really interesting because it was split 50-50, but half the people said, hey man, you got to lay down the law. Like, if you don't, you don't have to be a jerk about it, but you got to lay down the law and you got to not pay that woman because that's not what she signed up for. And she kind of abused it without checking with you. And the other 50% said, you know, you really, you know, go talk to her, have a little, you know, a little bit more, be a little more lenient there. And it's not that big of a deal. Don't dock her for the pay. So Drew, what did you come out with after reading that situation?
Well, I think it's important to set the standard and to do it early. Like, the wrong time to set that standard is like 5 years in, you know, once the employees violated your policy for 5 years, you know. So earlier is better, but I don't know that I would lead with docking the employee's pay. I think I would, you know, I would have a meeting with that employee where I say, hey, I've noticed this and, you know, we agreed to this other thing and what do you think? Why is this happening? Do we need to revisit the policy or, you know, I would approach it that way before just immediately docking the pay. But, you know, I think everybody, when I read the forum post, everybody kind of agreed that, you know, you need to have some sort of conversation about this with the employee. Whether you lead by docking the pay or not, I don't know. I mean, it's probably up to you and your relationship with that employee. But I think the big picture is you got to realize there's sort of a power differential between you and the employee. And I did see some people in the forum saying, well, the employee should have come to you and said, you know, I need more vacation days. But I just, in my experience, employees aren't going to do that. You know, they're, even though you think you might be an approachable person, you're still the boss. And it's sort of up to you to kind of force some of these issues.
Yeah. And I hear you there. But from my perspective, I would be much more comfortable with, if I was faced with two scenarios, either taking a bunch of extra vacation without clearing it with the boss first, or going to them and saying, hey, I understand, but like, I understand that I'm out of vacation, but we had a family issue, or we had this great opportunity, or we got free tickets to the Bahamas. I feel like that would be so much less not terrifying, but it would be an easier thing to do to approach the boss as opposed to just take a really big liberty and go out and take that vacation without clearing it with them first. And it's a lot more respectful too. You know, I think for most parts, from this store owner's perspective, it wasn't, hey man, you took a couple extra vacation days. It wasn't necessarily the, you know, what, $250, $500, whatever it was. It wasn't the money. It was the fact that there wasn't that discussion. There wasn't the respect to say, hey, I know I'm out, but, you know, can we work around that?
Right.
So,
you know, there's this great book out there called The Game of Work, and it talks about setting just clear metrics for your employees. And then I think the key is just being diligent about enforcing them. Like, as soon as you see some deviation from them.
A game of work. Yeah. That you recommended that earlier. I'm going to check that out. So it really just, does it also turn work into kind of more of a competitive, like a fun loving game? Is that part of it? Or is it all about documentation?
But it's sitting down with your employees or one employee in particular and going over how you both agree that they are going to be, you know, judged on what they do. And yeah, trying to make it a little bit more fun. But I think that's a good place to start for this person.
Guy, the game of work. We'll link up to that in the show notes for the post here. And then finally, apologies to non-US listeners, because we're going to veer into a little US thing here. But with the Affordable Care Act kicking in here, huge discussion about health insurance in the United States and what people are doing. Really, bottom line is for most merchants buy policies on their own. And, you know, most people are looking, if you got a family, let's say you got a family of four, you're looking at probably between $600 and $1,000 a month for a catastrophic policy that probably has a $10,000 out-of-pocket deductible. And the price is probably increased by $100, $150 for you in the last month, which caused some consternation in the form. So that's what I'm doing. I mean, we paid, I think it's our rate went up. I think we pay roughly $600-ish for like a $10,000, almost exactly what I said. So Drew, are you doing something similar? Are you buying your own policy?
I am not. I get my policy, I get my healthcare through my wife, who has a sort of a steady job from a big company.
Got you. Nice.
So I'm a little bit embarrassed. I don't know a whole lot about the current state of the affairs here.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's not to get political. I mean, on anything. I'm probably too late for that. But it was, it was something that just, it was a real pain point for people in the forums, you know, and paying that much money. And I think no matter where you are politically, I think it's hard not to argue that the healthcare system in the United States is dramatically dysfunctional and broken in a lot of different ways.
Right.
And just, you know, seeing people get upset about that and talk about how they'll be spending $12,000 this year on something they'll probably won't see any benefits. So really it boils down to bankruptcy protection, right? You're paying that amount so that if something crazy happens where you're paying six figures for healthcare, you aren't cleaned out completely. So
right,
it's crazy. Anyway, if you want to vent about healthcare, come join us in the forums. We'd love to have you. It's for store owners doing 5K or more per month in revenue, or professionals with at least a year in the space. We got about 500 plus members. I think last month we had over 1,300 comments and 130 new discussions. And you can learn more or apply at ecommercefuel.com/form. So, Drew, it's been fun rounding stuff up. You doing anything fun for Christmas? You spent a Christmas in New York?
Christmas in New York City.
Man, does it get any more magical than that?
No, it doesn't. Well, it doesn't get any more magical. I'm hosting my mother and my wife's mother in my two-bedroom apartment for a couple of days, so that's magic.
That does sound magical right there.
That will be magic. If you want to see any or to witness that magic, feel free to come to the Upper West Side and
what's your address? Could you give that out on the podcast right now? Actually,
me, please.
For anyone who wants to, come crash with you at Christmas.
Yeah.
Maybe you can get a picture of that and we can post it up in the show notes.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of Christmas magic up there.
Awesome. Well, everyone else, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thanks so much for listening. And Drew, appreciate you coming on.
I love being here. See you next time.
Thanks.
Bye.
That's going to do it for this week. But if you're interested in launching your own e-commerce store, download my free 55-page ebook on niche selection and getting started. And if you're a bit more experienced, look into the e-commerce Fuel private forum. It's a vetted community for store owners with at least 4,000 in monthly sales or industry professionals with at least a year or more experience in the e-commerce space. You can learn more about both the ebook and the forum at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.